Mr. Apocalypse is coming. He is rising into view just like the sun. He's bringing living truth and bringing freedom. And a wake-up call designed for everyone. The very thing you've been longing for. Or it might be the very last thing on your mind. It could be something that you sent on ahead of you. Or it could be something you left behind.
It is time for a weekly visit from our favorite social, political, and metaphysical commentator, Les Visible. He writes several blogs right around the globe that expresses reality as it is seen from beyond that smoky mirror of spin and deception, with a style and candor that cuts deep, separating, as it were, the bone from the marrow. And here at Feet to Fire, we experience the audio edition with the powerful poetic delivery of his written message, with a style that you will love or hate, depending upon your desire to be alive and awakened to the light of truth, or remain asleep in the darkness of delusion. Let's take a trip across the pond to somewhere in Europe, and this week's comments from Les Visible.
Oh, yes. It's Sunday once again, and that means we find ourselves in the process of another radio broadcast. Of course, the saucer pod is humming silently above the meadow outside this small neighborhood. I love that laser and mirror tech that keeps it invisible. I don't know if we'll head up there for a bit of hovering about, but I'll keep it running nonetheless, since it's got what the guys on Sirius Cluster call infinity power, meaning it never runs out. I don't understand the process entirely, but what they've told me is that there's a device on the ship that sucks particles out of space and transforms them into energy. Apparently, this is inexhaustible. It also does this in the ocean when I cruise around under the surface. That seems to be another source of inexhaustible energy. They tell me it has to do with ions and photons and the like, and that when they are arranged a certain way with an added catalyst, it provides enormous power. Something I notice when I see the numbers on the speedometer moving too fast to register on the eye. I've also got this magnetic shield that allows me to avoid obstacles when I'm going too fast to see them. It's like being in one of those high-powered video games in turbo mode. Is there anything I can say about the world at this point in the broadcast when I usually have something to say about the world? You know as much as I do. The false flag got put back on the shelf again for some reason, or we still have a couple of days before the election, and the election scenario isn't such a big deal anymore with election fraud being so incredibly obvious and no one doing anything about it, and many people not even caring. When they've got such an uninterrupted skate going on, maybe there's no need for a massive false flag when the population is so docile and accommodating. It is beyond absurd that by this time it is in public knowledge that not only was 9/11 a rogue intelligence op, but Israel was the engineer behind it all. I can only think there is some kind of, has to be some kind of reverse Kabbalah magic at work that impacts on the mind of the general public. I don't know how it works. I just know that it must be going on because anyone should be able to see what's at work here, and most either don't or don't care. It has zero effect on me and certain others, and this is puzzling too. Giving the bombastic arrogance of chicken shit Yahoo, one would think it is a given that he will initiate some sort of outrage in defense of his wounded pride, but maybe he's not in charge. Maybe he takes his marching orders from the satanic Rothschilds, or maybe there's some slathering demon who transmits his will to Banker Nation. I don't know, and it's pointless to speculate. The ongoing Blue Meanie headset of domestic police forces is worrying. It's the one thing that makes me wonder about migrating back into that zone where I was once in residence. Thankfully, I am assured that I am under divine protection at all times unless there's some sort of a teaching event needed to take place, and that's all under the guidance of the laws of karma. The great thing about the Lords of Karma is that they are all about resolution, so no matter what happens, afterwards it's behind you. One thing that doesn't get mentioned often enough in these times, karmic resolution is sped up to the max. You can cover far more territory in terms of resolving your karma than at any other time. It is possible to speed up the process considerably. Of course, this can mean a lot more bumps and bruises, as I personally can attest to, but then the whole thing evens out somehow, and you find yourself to be a far better person than you ever were. Life on this planet is not about surviving beyond all of the natural conditions that come about for everyone else. Life is about maximizing your evolutionary progress in this particular life and getting a nice launch off into whatever it is that waits beyond, and so forth. In the annals of history, there are few mentions of individuals living to any great length of time beyond the usual reach of their fellows. If you're a student of occult history, as we are here, then there are names that come up which indicate certain individuals have escaped the net of physical death. There are legends about members of certain religious faiths who have simply ascended into the heavenly realms. Perhaps the most well-known of them is Elijah, who ascended into the heavens in a flaming chariot, which I presume was actually a flying saucer. There's too much evidence of visitations from other systems and indications of entities who migrated here from other places and also migrated to other places. We don't know the details. Well, some of us certainly do, but they're generally close-mouthed about all that, the ones that actually know. We got some number of scholars, fantasists, wackos, and sundry who write endless books about these things, but I wouldn't know much about those things primarily because I don't pay much attention to that end of things. People come around on a regular basis talking about Aniki and Enlil and Anukai and others. I probably got at least one of those names wrong. They don't mean anything to me. I don't mean to disparage those who have put their time into studying and cataloging these things, but it all leaves me cold. I have no idea what any of this information means, and until I come into contact with someone who does, I've got little time for any of it. People come around who have investments in the Urantia book. It's a great big book about things that happened a long time ago, maybe, supposedly, and none of it moves me even a little bit. I look at this book as being a functional doorstop, but nothing else, just like all the complex history from the Scientologists and books like Beelzebub's Tales to His Grandson. I fail to see the relevance to any of it in the moment. It's like finding value in the levels of substrata in the earth. This kind of thing may be of interest to geologists and archaeologists, but I take nothing away from it. It just doesn't apply to the now, and the now is the only thing that is real, and as far as most people go, the now isn't real or present either. I'd be just as improved by getting my history from the Star Wars films or Star Trek. If something is of practical value, then I give it my attention. I know enough about Atlantis and Lemuria to know that they destroy themselves when their mechanical knowledge outstripped their moral compass. They're failed experiments from long ago. We're on what looks like another failed experience, that observably does not look like it's going to turn out well for most people. Knowledge is one thing, wisdom is quite another. Give me wisdom every time. We have the record of Lao Tzu, who spent his days as a librarian when he wasn't shaking his head at the insanity of his times. Eventually, it had enough, and he got on a water buffalo, and he rode it out through the Great Wall of China and disappeared into the mist of legend. If Lao Tzu couldn't take it anymore, I suspect the same would apply to me, because I am nowhere near his level, but I can see that these times are worse than the times he was in. I don't know about a single spiritual seeker of any note who didn't at some point walk away from the world. It seems like they couldn't gain the understanding they needed by moving around in the material soup of ambulatory ignorance that has prevailed over the civilized world. Every teacher I know about spent most of their time keeping to themselves. Jesus Christ preached for 3 years, but he was gone for 18 years before that in India and other places. Buddha, so it is reported, spent something like 6 years sitting under a tree. Bodhidharma spent a whole lot of time staring at a wall. Muhammad spent a lot of time in the desert and in caves. Yogis are known to spend their times in mountain caves, remote jungle locations, and wherever there aren't a whole lot of people. It seems like the biggest problem in achieving spiritual illumination is the proximity of other people. Why else would they all be removing themselves from the maddening and maddened crowd? I'm hoping my next port of call will provide me with something similar. It might mean there would be less of this kind of thing. And it might mean that it all comes together somehow, and I can be a part, it's still be engaged. It's a pretty inescapable fact that some version of apocalyptic and post-apocalyptic conditions are going to manifest at some point. The evildoers proceed without respite, and the dumbed-down masses simply go along with the program, and it doesn't matter how bad the food is, how toxic the water gets, how widespread the alcoholism and drug addiction, how common criminal behavior becomes. I can see one of the tarot cards of the time being a scene of drooling idiots thumb hammering their non-functioning cell phones. Yeah, as I reflect on what I've just said, I can see where this all presents a pretty negative picture, but I think that only applies where it applies. It's what it looks like in the high, wide, and unwholesome, but some of the images I have consistently gotten is that wherever the darkness spreads wide around the world, there will be pockets of light. This is simple physics. This is yin and yang. So it seems to me that anyone still possessing some amount of intelligence would try to get an idea of where one of those pockets of light would be. Of course, the most important pocket of light for anyone would be the pocket of light within them. That would naturally resonate like a compass or a GPS toward greater pockets of light in the wider world. The main problem, as I see it, is when the individual waits too long to gravitate toward any one of these greater pockets of light and finds the access points blocked by energies and entities of darkness. I don't know if Hawaii or wherever I wind up on whatever island is going to be a solution for me, but it'll certainly be an attractive environment to attempt to troubleshoot the times in. The weather's perfect and food grows everywhere. On the downside, I'm aware that a lot of seriously dumbed-down people live there, as well as some very wealthy people of dubious character. That makes you wonder, since Mr. Apocalypse is going to leave no stone unturned, or no soul unturned. I have my ticket now. That doesn't mean I will actually go. There's no telling what might happen in the world in the under 2 months that I remain here. The price was so attractive that I felt compelled to jump at it, given that I will be traveling at the most expensive time of the year. I'd probably be less concerned about finances had I not been so very badly ripped off and stolen from earlier in the year. It's put me in a situation where I have to pay a great deal more attention than I might have had to. At the same time, the Ineffable has told me that he intends to replace everything taken from me, and I believe that. It's just about my believing that, actually, and I do. This is the nature of everything we are put through. We are put through things to lose our taste for things. We are put through things to develop our taste for things. We are put through things to learn their meaning. To learn their lack of meaning. We're given things to experience their value and lack of value. We're put into the company of people so that they might expose themselves to us, and so that we may expose ourselves to them and never think for a moment that this won't happen. We all have the ability to maintain a facade for a certain length of time, but eventually, what we are makes itself known. Some of us are catalysts in the lives of others, meaning that they will behave in ways they did not expect to. This happens with me. Because of the nature of my focus, it impacts on those who are around me, and I've had the same thing happen in reverse with certain people. We bring things out in each other. Sometimes that is a good thing, and sometimes the experience is not so positive at the time. In the end, it all works out. Recently, during my time in Eastern Europe, I was in the company of a fellow who considered himself a teacher of others. He was, to put it bluntly, but honestly, full of himself, and he went out of his way to tell everyone who came to visit me how he was a healer of others and how he solved people's problems, how people were naturally drawn to him and driven to tell him of their problems. And the whole time I was there, I never saw this happen once, and it was fairly evident that he was often seething about the way people spoke of me to him. I took him to a festival, and all through the festival I could see him giving me the evil eye, because I was often in the company of certain attractive young ladies, and Suzanne was around as well. She's also attractive, by the way. But anyway, of course, he saw all of this in terms of himself, projecting his nature upon mine. It never occurred to him that one of the reasons these ladies liked to visit and talk with me was that I had no designs on any of them, and they knew that. His own wife left him, from what I hear, because he was an insufferable and dominating control freak. Well, we got on fine for a time, and then he just couldn't take the attention I got, and by comparison, the lack of attention that he got by comparison. So in the end, he turned into a nasty sociopath, which he no doubt already was, and he did all kinds of nasty things to me and my belongings. Others who knew him were astonished at the way in which he was acting out. You would think that he would have been more careful in his behavior, given how small the community is that he is a part of. He had so little control over himself due to his spending his life seeking control over others, so it was that his grip over himself was exceedingly weak. While I was staying at an inn during the days I was packing my things to leave, he slipped up into the space in the evening while I was gone and took a dump in the bag that held my dirty clothes, probably thinking I wouldn't be going in there again. I discovered it, of course, because that is how things work with me. I had just gotten out of the hospital with my broken hip, and well, he was very, very nasty to me through that whole period too, and a few times I had to interact with him. In the end, he had reduced himself to a truly contemptible figure, and I had done nothing along the way to warrant any of it. I had behaved myself very well. In the end, his complaints were the subject of laughter by all who heard them. Bizarre? Truly bizarre. Well, that's how it goes, and I learned a powerful lesson about people. My free and easy ways with one and all have come to an end. I'm much more watchful now. It's not like I missed seeing the capacity for this in him. I noted it, but just didn't think it would apply to me. Of all people, it would apply to me. This I have come to understand. Well, my friends, we have come to the end of another broadcast, and I will see you next week if there is one. In the meantime, be vigilant, be aware, and exercise your capacity to care. That said, Hare Krishna! Greetings, my dear friend Lord Ganesha. La ilaha illallahu. Much love, Lady Nature. Hail, Lord Jesus Christ. Om Amitabha. And as ever, carry on, Baha'u'llah, aloha, and hello! Oh, yeah.
He's long and tall and slender, and he's got a walking stick. You'll be changed forever if you get hit by it. Coming for the Zionists and all their bankers too. And if you don't behave yourself, he's coming after you. There's no way to stop him. He can't be bribed or bought. And he's sweeter than the air in spring, meaner than you thought. You're the deer inside his headlights, if you're the kind that hunts by night. And no one stays anonymous when he gets you in his sights. Mr. Apocalypse is coming, oh yeah. He's rising into view just like the sun. He's bringing living truth, he's bringing freedom. And a wake-up call designed for everyone. Apocalypse is here.
Feet to Fire is a production of IPS Media Works on the OnSync Radio Network of Stations.